Hello and welcome to episode 549 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I am your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by one other M this week. So M, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, let's start with you.
Start and end. Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So Megan is off doing Megan things, which could range from free diving in the Andes or having margaritas with a drag queen. So anything's possible. Hanging from the ceiling, swinging around in a hoop, joining the circus. Yeah. Megan does a lot of things. She is a Renaissance woman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Understatement.
I expected you to have a bigger reaction.
I mean, she could be Thelma and Louising it. She could be.
Well, let's hope that she doesn't go. Sorry. She's not going to drive all the way to the Grand Canyon. She's not going to drive all the way to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, she could be doing anything. She could be mining for gold. She could be doing. You never actually know what Megan Claire McLaughlin is doing.
I do enjoy her Instagram video reels for that purpose because I never know what's going to pop up.
Usually hanging from the ceiling, but yes.
Yes, usually hanging from the ceiling. I have such a boring life that I don't share any of it online anymore. Anyway, how are you?
The best, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still recovering from my screening of a certain upcoming biopic that I saw last night as we were recording. Miguel
is so good, right? Miguel.
It is not good. It is not good. I'm going to write a review for the site, but I will definitely say things that I liked about it, but it is. And I know that there's a lot of criticism online about those who like it are attacking people who don't like it because they think that you have this preconceived notion about who he is and what wasn't included in this film and what they didn't try to tackle. And the fact that the Jackson family, basically financed this film or financed the reshoots because of the material that they couldn't show because of potential lawsuits. I reacted to what I saw on screen. I'm not a Megan is the Jackson aficionado. Megan is the one that's seen Finding Neverland. I never saw Finding Neverland, which was the documentary about the allegations. And what I saw on the screen was not good. I've seen the Jackson TV movie. I've seen the Jackson limited series. And I've seen Coleman Domingo with demonic contacts. And just not good. It's just not good. Like the performance numbers are good. There are moments of genius where you get to see his like process. And I think Jafar Jackson does a very good impersonation of Michael. I don't think he's an actor, but I think he understands how Michael moves and he certainly could dance. So, and the young actor who plays Michael in the Jackson 5 days is very good. But it is so by the numbers and not deep at all, not thoughtful at all. It just, Mike Myers pops up at one point. There's Don King as a character. It's chopped up in a way that narratively just doesn't make any sense. And I think part of that is because they had an original screenplay that was probably a very well thought out, very intelligent screenplay that was originally filmed. And because of legal reasons, they had to cut it all up. And the last 20, 30 minutes is just concert footage. And I think the fans are going to love that. But as someone who went to this looking for a film, it is not a film. But, judge for yourself. Are you going to go see it this weekend?
I think so. Jason wants to see it. I can't remember what tour Jason saw.
Mm.
I think it was the Bad Tour.
That would have been
But
in
he's seeing
88.
Michael Jackson. Okay, yeah, he was a child, so he was five. No, he was 8 years old. So yeah, I'm looking through a collection of people's reactions to it. I do see like people can have whatever opinion they want to about the movie, but I feel like going after people for having, I mean, this is a film Twitter problem, no matter what the movie is. Going after somebody for their different opinion or having a different experience than you, I think, is a problem of film Twitter, just in general. And this is probably just the latest example in casualty of that. And like you said, you can dislike the movie for not including certain things or, you know, supposing to be something that it's not. But if you're judging it on the merit of what you saw on screen, you can't like just leave people alone. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, some people, I think it probably depends on your relationship to the music. Like some people seem to really love his music and just really love the opportunity to see someone who looks so much like him and moved so much like him on screen, and that's fine. I don't have that relationship with his music. I love Thriller, the album. After that, it kind of fell off. For me personally, but Thriller was one of the first albums I ever bought, and I played the shit out of that. And to me, and I won't say any more. I'll hold further sort of analysis until you get the chance to see it. Certainly, Megan too. But for me, there are two far more interesting stories than what was told to sort of rags to riches. Traditional biopic path that it takes. Which, by the way, do you remember you saw Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, right? With you've
Yes,
seen that, right?
John C.
You
Reilly.
remember,
Oh yeah. Oh
yes.
yeah.
Do you remember how it begins with John C. Reilly and Tim Meadows? And John C. Reilly's up against the wall with his arm up, and Tim Meadows goes, Dewey Cox needs to think about his life before he goes on stage, and then they start the
Oh
flashbacks. That's how
yeah.
Michael begins. Michael, but no one says Michael Jackson needs to think about his life, but he's getting ready to walk on stage into Bad, and he's jumping up and down, and then it just like fades into Gary, Indiana. Like
Oh.
anyway, but two things I
I
think are
mean,
more.
yeah,
Sorry.
sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say two things are I think are more interesting. Number one, I would like for them to biopics, I think in general, musical or non, are always much more interesting when they focus on a specific period of that artist's life. I would have loved to just seen the 9 months it took for him to conceive and record Thriller, to go from the pressure of,
Okay.
there's a story there because he went from the pressure of having off the wall. Breaking away from the Jackson 5, breaking away from Joe Jackson, recording this, working out the beats, figuring out what his sound could be, going away from the vaguely disco sounds of Off the Wall because disco was dead at this point, recording the music videos, getting MTV to show a black artist because they didn't show black artists before Michael Jackson. I mean, it just there's so much meat there, and it could be a really tight, nice 90 20 90 hour and a, I mean a 2 hour film that gives you who Michael Jackson was but in a more specific way. Then there's a relationship that he has with a bodyguard who was hired by Joe when Michael was a child, and it seems like the film only features him like he's in the background. He doesn't have a lot of lines, but there seemed to be a connection there. Then the film does explore that connection just a little bit. I think it would have been really interesting to look at the Jackson legacy from the outside looking in through the perspective of this bodyguard that was there for all of this.
That's interesting. Yeah, the biopics that are more about a specific time or a certain amount of moments and not try to, and I feel like we've gotten away from, you know, cradle to grave kind of things, and that's not what this movie is doing, from the sounds of it, obviously. But like, I think those are the more successful ones because they're much more succinct and there's a lot more intention behind them. I would say that the I probably mentioned this before when I saw this, but like we saw the tour of the MJ musical, and I was not looking forward to seeing it because it just felt weird going to going to it essentially. But the musical was great. Like I'll admit it was a, I don't want to say fun, but I mean like it was cool to see those see that kind of staging live and see how they repurposed a lot of the music. Now this is before this was the creative, sorry, I keep yawning, the creative process before the Dangerous World Tour. So it was before anything else came out. And I felt bad saying that that I liked so I felt I didn't like admitting that I liked the musical in a weird way because it's I don't know what I thought that that meant, but I anytime I see I've been to a movie in the last couple of months and they're like from so and so the producer of Bohemian Rhapsody, like I can't
Yeah.
hold in my verbal disdain. It's like, ugh, no. No, no, no,
Well, people
no,
forget
no.
that that musical, it was nominated for 10 Tony Awards, like, and it won four. So it's you shouldn't be ashamed of liking it. It is a popular piece of entertainment.
Yeah, I think is it still running?
It is. I checked
Oh.
today. It really is.
That's
Unless I misread
crazy.
the statement.
No, it closed on the West End,
Yeah.
but I think it's still it's still going.
Well, I mean,
So,
what else are people going to go see on Broadway these days? Beaches. Anyway, we'll talk about that on a different podcast with a different crew. But we're going to talk, and we'll talk about Michael once you've seen it, had your opportunity. Hopefully I haven't ruined it for you. I don't want to, you and I differ on things. Megan and I, God knows we differ on things. So I'm just very interested in seeing what you guys think. I have a prediction. I don't, I bet Megan doesn't even see it, to be honest, because she's so upset about the fact that it doesn't tackle the allegations.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's been so public about how the family is involved. They're not gonna do that.
No.
And this is a movie that is, from what I've seen, and you can probably confirm that it's a movie that is trying to appeal to its the widest possible amount of people that it can. So that's not
It's
gonna happen if you're going to be like have almost like a takedown of one of the most successful musical artists of all time. You're just not.
right. Anyway, I'm sure we will have a bunch more to say about it on a future podcast when everybody has seen the film. Until then, we are going to talk about Netflix's Beef, which, judging from the numbers that came out today, and I will credit Jalal Haddad for sharing this with me, Beef Season 2 debuted at 60% lower from Season 1, where Season 1 was viewed with approximately 5.8 million views in its first weekend. And, Beef was debuted at number 10 on the Netflix chart with 2.4 million views.
Wow.
So, judging from that, not a lot of you have seen it, but yes, Beef Season 2 is out, and we are here to talk about it. And in case you didn't know, Joey, why don't you explain your background?
So this is from one of my favorite SNL sketches ever. It is one where Maya Rudolph and Kristen Wiig break, where it's a game show hosted by Bill Hader and Vanessa Bayer is the contestant, and they are Vonda and Shonda, the two like Price is Right girls, and the meme is this is backwards. The question was like they come back from a commercial. That's how the sketch starts, and it goes, and they're like, "What was the answer? What was the answer you submitted?" And you submitted Beef. That was the answer to the question. It turns out the answer to the question is nine, not beef. But before, it says like beef sounds right when they ask, hey, Vonda and Shonda, what do you think of so and so's answer? And Maya Rudolph calls, beef sounds right.
Yeah, they're Swedish or something, right? Or
Yeah,
they have
something.
an
They're
accent,
something.
Euro trash accent or something like
Yeah.
that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's so funny. And when they get in the golf cart, they drive around and Kristen Wiig runs into all the scenery the set design.
Yeah,
Anyway,
that's great.
so that's your call out to beef. Mine is, for those who have seen the show, you know, Burberry, the
Burger.
Dachshund. And for those of you who haven't seen it, there is a dog, and I will leave it at that. So, Joey, why don't you tell us what Beef Season 2 is? Who's in it? What does it deal with? What's the beef?
Yeah, so Beef season two is not about a road rage incident like it was in season one between Steven Yeun and Ali Wong. This is an exploration of different generational dynamics in marriage. This mainly centers on a country club in California. That the general manager is Oscar Isaac and his wife is Carey Mulligan, Joshua and Lindsay. They've been married for quite some time. Enough that, long enough that you can have a very successful fundraiser and then at night get really drunk and scream and almost have a domestic disturbance, if you will. And so at the end of the first episode, well, not the end, the thrust of the beef is they are very unhappy in their marriage and they're running this country club financially sort of underwater. There's a new owner coming in, and there was a younger couple played by Kaylee Spaney and Charles Melton who work at the country club, sort of like underlings there, and they witness the domestic disturbance and they happen to record it. And they use it. I don't think they necessarily realize how much power it has at the beginning when they have it, but they use the recording as leverage to make their way up sort of like through the ranks, and then it gets a little more complicated. And it's sort of season two is sort of about how marriages are different and how you can become like an adversary with the person that you are married to, and sort of about general, I don't want to say ennui, but I would say anger and resentment, and how no matter how happy you are and how idealistic you think you can be, you might be destined to have a miserable life. That's kind of what it's about.
There's a lot that's going on here, and sometimes I think the messaging gets a little muddled in the, you know, the it's the couples fighting against each other. It's the couples fighting amongst themselves. It's the generations fighting each other. And then there's an entire subplot featuring Yong Yoon Jun, who it plays Chairwoman Park, who owns is the South Korean woman who owns the resort at which Oscar Isaac works. And she's like a Korean gangster, Seoul gangster, almost. And she's like a billionaire and she can do anything. She's
Has a ton of power, yeah.
a ton of power, ton of money, ton of authority. And I just, you know, this that in at times kind of gets in the way of the story, I think, in my opinion. Like, I wanted much more attention to Kaylee Spaney and Charles Melton. And I think there's a really interesting subplot with Charles Melton where he's trying to, you know, he's a half Korean man raised in Arizona, and he's trying to reconnect to his
Yeah.
Korean roots, much to the angst of his wife, Kaylee Spaney, or his fiance, Kaylee Spaney. And I think those are really interesting themes and things that we've not necessarily seen before. But I don't know, the whole like Squid Games of it all comes in, and it's by the end, I was really disappointed in the direction that it went. Like I really didn't like the last two episodes of this. I was with it up until then, but the last two episodes go down these really bizarre left turns, kind of like what season
Yeah.
one does.
See, I think the bizarre turns that the last two episodes make, if I could play, I guess, a little bit of devil's advocate of what I don't know what I thought necessarily what they were doing, because it goes where the show begins is not where the show ends.
No.
I was really high on Beef season one when it first came out. I think that opinion has waned a little bit. I think I like season two more than season one. I think that the humor is a little bit more fine-tuned here. I think particularly the last episode, I think it's sort of just being like, we're gonna do whatever the fuck they want. And I think it's like there's some like broad comedy there that I think is really oddly rewarding. But I can see how, I was wondering, because I was talking to some people about how they were with season one up until the end, and there's some crazy violence that happens in the last episode of I think Megan didn't like it, the end of Beef season one. R.I.P. Maria Bello, both halves of Maria Bello.
Oh, that's right.
And spoiler,
Under the door.
spoiler. Yeah, oh my God, that I have that lodged in my brain still from like 7 years ago or 3 years ago. I don't know. I guess I thought the ending, not to give anything away, but they do end up in Korea, and it kind of made me think it was trying to say something along the lines of, if you're gonna survive something like that with somebody, you better be sort of be like damn sure is with somebody that you can actually trust and you actually will have somebody's back for. When I was watching the screeners before I reviewed it, I was like, where are we going? Both literally, figuratively. So the huge swing that it takes at the end, I'm very curious by it. I'm still working through a lot of my feelings or reactions to it, but I like this ending more than I like the ending of the first season, I think. I'm going to be talking to director Jake Schreier. He directed the first episode and the last episode, and I
Okay.
want to pick his brain.
Well, I mean, it kind of it folds back on itself. It's circular in really interesting ways, and to
Oh,
discuss
yeah.
that further would be to spoil things. But I it's to the point where it's replaying. Some characters have the exact same dialogue that other characters have from the finale to the
Even like the
pilot.
motif at the beginning. Yeah.
I think for me it's the performances. I think the foursome are all very, very good. Probably Carey Mulligan is my MVP, but I don't mean to put
Mine
the other
too.
three down because if I had to rank them, it would be Carey Mulligan, Oscar Isaac, Kaylee Spaney, and Charles Melton. Charles Melton, he's good in it, and it's sometimes quite good, but he sort of plays a variation of the same character that he plays in May, December. And not in
He's
the
so,
physicality, but just kind of the
he's a
aimlessness.
doofus.
Exactly.
Now, sorry, I let you finish your thought and I'll ask you a question.
No, but I was just going to say, I think this Carey Mulligan owns this, and she has some really great scenes with Oscar Isaac. You can tell that they have a lot of chemistry. They work really well together because the undercurrent all of this is their intense love and passion for each other is the beef. It is the thing that spars this anxiety and their fights, their sparring between them. They love each other so much. They have so much passion in this relationship, and they have disappointments, and they take it out on each other in really interesting ways. So it's a compelling between those two, the foursome. It's really interesting examination of marriages, or pending marriages, I should say.
Yeah, the I'd be very interested to go back and just hone in on how when each couple is with each other and they talk about the other couple together, because there's a lot of that, because Jason's watching it now and he, I think we're on episode three, and it's sort of like that thing where like you could fight with, like, I could fight with Jason, but then, like, when we're around other people and we have, like, the shared opinion, we're like, oh my God, can you believe they did that? Like, I don't know, there's, like, this weird, like, alliance that you automatically have because you're married or because you're in a relationship that you have, like, this sort of grandfathered in allegiance to each other, obviously, for various reasons, but it's I find that very fascinating. Like the part where after the fight happens and Carey Mulligan and Oscar Isaac are cleaning up and they're like, they're just lurking on our property. Who does that? And I was just like, oh yeah, those are the things that you say with your spouse, when you're just sort of trying to get on the same page with each other. Or like
Or
whenever Kaylee Spaney, on the inverse of that, where they're just like, oh my God, rich people, don't they suck? So
we took it a little too far. That's
Mm-hmm.
it's the only way they kind of address their incredibly violently aggressive fight is, oh, that went a little too far. It's just, you
Yeah,
know,
see?
married couples fight, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for this particular couple, it looks as if he almost like bashed her head in with a golf club. That's what it looks like. It was from an outside perspective, that's where it may have been going. Now, a question that I had for you would be, because when you were talking about it before the show dropped, I think you were, I don't want to say annoyed, but like, did your opinion of the younger couple, was that sustained throughout the whole season, or did that change? Because I think you were a little annoyed by, I think they're purposely supposed to be like really obnoxious because they're young. Like the
They're
part that
not.
like I rolled my eyes really hard when they were like, it's in like the first 10 minutes where they're in the car together and they're like, I'm just gonna go drop off his wallet. She's like, oh, I'll miss you. And I was like, I want to punch you in the face.
They didn't annoy. The only thing that really annoyed me about them in the first episode was how clueless they were about everything. I think they get smarter as they go. It's that they don't have, and I don't want to get all generational, but I'm wondering if
Do it. Shake your cane.
well, I am not that old, you asshole.
I know. I mean your cane. I mean any cane.
Yeah, I am old. I wonder if there's something there, and just tell me what you think. I think there's something there about the lack of experience on the Gen Z aspect. They don't know, they're not wise to the two scenarios. They're not necessarily, and I'm being very general because obviously there are some Gen Z individuals who are very, very wise, but maybe they're not as experienced. Maybe they don't, you know, maybe they've been sheltered a bit. They have too close relationship, or have had too close relationships to family. You know, she, Kaylee Spaney's character, keeps calling her parents again and again and again, but they kind of don't interact with her at all. And she's lost. So she's trying to figure things out for herself. I do think they grow through this experience. I think they grow as a couple or as individuals, not necessarily as a couple. I can take that back. Not as a couple, but they grow as an individuals throughout the show. So their beginning, they annoyed me because they are intentionally dumb and inexperienced, and inexperienced in annoying ways. But I think they grow out of that because they have to, they learn to operate on their own, and evolve from there.
Yeah, I kept thinking that I wonder if the one of the things that these two characters bonded over was the lack of connection with their own respective families. Because she Ashley, Kaylee Spaney, feels very tossed aside by her family, who's his her dad seems to be, I think she's with, I might be getting this wrong, but it seems like he's in like another marriage, and
He is,
she's
yeah.
he has another family. And it seems that Charles Melton, Austin, his family, he's not very close to. So I wonder if there's something in there about they bonded over that as when they first started dating. But it's sort of interesting to me how the two of them don't really have a connection to their own respective parents, and their main the main antagonists in their in this story are older people. I saw this actually a couple days ago, that apparently there's a line of dialogue where Eunice, Chairman Park's assistant, was talking to the two of them about their relationship and them being like an interracial couple. And she says something, she's like, "Oh, I don't consider him to be Korean. I only consider him to be Arizonian."
Yep, I
And
remember
I
that.
saw, yeah, and I saw the an interview where Charles Melton said that that either the bit of dialogue or that little interaction was actually based on something that he experienced as a young person. Like, he was dating, I think, like a white girl, and she said something along those lines. And I was just like, holy crap, that's what a wild thing to say about someone that you were in a relationship with.
Someone also says it's either him or it's her. Most people think he's Mexican. There's some reference to that. His character has a lot going on, and it's almost like, there's only so much screen time. There's a lot of plot that goes back and forth. So there's only so much you can explore. But his attempts at, he understands some Korean because his mother speaks Korean to him. He is attempting to reconnect with his ethnicity and his culture. And that, that has pluses and minuses. He's trying to be an Instagram influencer for exercise, and that isn't going well. He doesn't have, he's got a, he was the guy that had the won the big trophy when he was in high school or college. I think it was college. He won the big trophy when he was in college football, but now he's aimless and hasn't followed up on that promise. So there's a lot that's going on with that character. And I want to talk a little bit about Emmys when we get a chance, but I think it's really interesting. He's the most interesting character. I don't think it's the best performance, but he is the most interesting of the four.
Yeah, I think he's I think Charles Melton does a really good job at I don't know how to say this. It's not really what I mean, but he's kind of at the beginning of the show, he's a little bit of like a golden retriever. He's a little bit of a puppy. He's a little bit of like, there's some dialogue where he says like, "Oh, I want to do what's best for you. I didn't want to make you upset. I didn't want to make you mad." But then you can tell he's really, really conflicted, because this relationship that he has with Ashley, it feels, I don't want to say codependent, but I mean, like, they're so open with sharing stuff with one another, because they, in a sense, I wonder if each other is all the other one has. But then at the same time, when he realizes that he wants something of his own that is singular to him because of his background, she pushes in a way because she thinks that that is going to untether their relationship.
Yes,
I
she
find
feels
that whole
threatened
thing
by it.
very fascinating.
Yes,
Oh my
absolutely.
God.
Yes.
Some of the stuff that she does is not just hashtag cringe, but like hashtag red flag. Like I was just
Yeah.
like, ooh, if you would like float up outside your body, girl, you would not like what you are seeing. Or if this was something that you saw in another person's relationship, you would tell that person to get away from that person. So that I find very interesting. Yeah.
And as much as there is to explore about him, I think that Kaylee Spaney's character is undercooked a little bit, because there's a lot of, I don't, a borderline psychoses going on in her. Complete lack of trust, complete, just so willing to go to these extremes, to get information, to there's this segment where she has a panic attack because she thinks he's having an affair on her, and he's not at all at that point. Not that he ever does, but he may be in an emotional affair, but anyway, she jumps out of the car and runs screaming into like darkness and ends up falling down this ravine into a pond, and
I
just
felt so.
what's going
I
on with
laughed
her?
out loud when that happened, and I felt
Yeah.
bad. It's like, yeah. I think it's in the. I think it's the beginning of episode 3 or 4, where she says something along the lines of, "Hey, can we do it a little bit? Can I do the check a little early,
Yeah.
earlier than normal? Because it'll help." Basically, saying like it'll help her mental health, and it's going through his phone to see if he's messaging other girls. I was like, that is psychotic.
You,
Psychotic.
if you end up talking to the writer, and that's Lee, who wrote this? This is,
We saw
Lee, I'm sorry, Lee Sung Jin.
Lee Sung Jin.
If you ever end up talking to Lee Sung Jin, I want to know, does that insecurity stem from the relationship between her parents, like the divorce there? Did her father cheat on her mother? Is that where this is coming from? The show, I don't think, ever tells us, but that is my guess, is that that is
Yeah.
the nature of her
Ooh.
insecurity, her psychoses, is that she it's trauma inherited from the parents.
I think so. That would be my guess, but I would love to. I need to email a bunch of people on Netflix. I need more information. Yes.
But Carey Mulligan is fantastic. She
Oh.
I loved her character because she is a she has a very specific she's a interior designer, and she has a very specific style that apparently no one else in the show likes. And
They
I
call it
can't.
colonial. It's
Yeah, it's
like,
cold. Yes,
oh.
it's old school. She likes old colors. She likes a lot of patterns. It's very grandma, very old, probably very British.
Yeah.
And it clashes heavily with the austere severity and minimalist of the Korean style. And so it's really interesting where she's trying to build her own career. She's trying to do all these things, and nobody really seems to like what she does.
Yeah, it feels in a lot of respects her character is really kind of like set adrift from everybody in a lot of ways. They're very comfortable with like pushing her away or like setting her free to let her do like because they just don't like what she's about. Like the part there's I think a scene in the first episode where she's singing sitting with a bunch of women, it's like three women from the club. And she, the three women are on a sofa, and she's sitting alone in a chair. And they're just like talking like they're friends. There's that you assume that they are friends with each other, and then one of them gives her an order. You're like, no, you have no. Can you go do this for me? That would be really great. Please, can you reserve a conference room? Because I would really love for you to do that. And it's sort of like. In the argument, she says to Oscar Isaac, she was like, you think that they're your friends, but they're not. You work for them. And I feel like she doesn't understand that that can also be applied to her in a lot of ways. So I don't know. She's very lonely. She has a there's a whole through line in here about how she thinks she's like she needs to have like cosmetic surgery, even though she's Carey Mulligan's a beautiful, beautiful woman. And that connection leads to like a lot of the craziness later in the season. But it's I don't know. I feel like she's very lonely, and it's really sad.
It is sad, particularly episode five, but we won't talk about that. We won't
Oh
talk
God,
about
episode five.
that at all. But episode
I have
five.
my stupid exhaustive notes from when I reviewed the show in case, like
I glimpsed it
crazy.
very quickly. Yeah, well, I can't see it now, but I glimpsed it very briefly. You know, there's a really interesting hierarchy of age and power and money. I mean, we haven't even talked about William Fichtner, who plays Troy, a friend of Oscar Isaac's, who isn't really a friend, just more like a he likes to take him around, and I their relationship I don't fully understand. Like it's almost like he's Troy is so rich that he's bored and he does want to do nice things, but he also gets like this high from impressing
Oh
Oscar
yeah.
Isaac's character. It's Josh. It's weird.
Yeah.
So.
First of all, I can't believe that I've never seen that actor. Oh God, no, I can't think of who I think he should be with. He needs to be brothers with another actor and in a movie or a show, and I can't think of who it is now.
He looks a
I'm
little
glad I
bit
brought it
like
up.
Paul Bettany.
Oh, I can do that. Yeah. Let's look it up now.
That may not
See if
be
I
who
just
you're
Google.
talking about.
William Fincher looks like. Oh, he does not look like Matthew McConaughey. Google, shut up. Oh, he looks like Steven Weber.
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe Steven Weber, I'm thinking of. There, final answer. I'm gonna say Steven
Okay,
Weber, or
there
maybe
we
in
go.
a little Kevin
Steven
Bacon.
Weber. He definitely is of that tribe
Yes.
of white male.
That guy. That's the try. That guy.
He's good too. It's
Yeah.
really well acted all around. So
Yeah, I agree.
speaking of acting, do you think it's a little bit of category fraud to put Charles Melton and Kaylee Spaney in supporting, considering I think there are four leads to the series?
I agree. Yeah, it's you can make an to me you can make an argument. You can make several arguments of who are the leads, and I mean they're all four leads, but I mean like you could make probably very various cases as to who is supporting and who is the lead if you had to like relegate people to Emmy categories, but I think they're all four leads. Yes.
I would agree, although it looks like they're probably going with the younger actors
Supporting.
in supporting, which is, you know, I mean,
Sounds.
limited supporting actor. We have no idea who is a frontrunner there. And it could very well be that Charles Melton walks away with an Emmy in September. Because who is his competition? Jonathan Banks, Alessandro Nivola, from Love Story, Troy Kotsur, Black Rabbit, Jamie Bell, Half Man. Those are just the top on Gold Derby for that category. When
Yeah, I
and
think.
I haven't seen the other performances, but I know that Charles Melton certainly has more screen time than Alessandro Nivola.
I think that the biggest competition is Jamie Bell. I've seen one episode of Half Man. I think a lot of people are going to be very passionate about that performance. But I think. And a lot of people I've seen have said this, but I think that show, everyone is saying it's going to be a hard sit For that. Not that, Richard Gadd's, I mean, Richard Gadd's last show dealt with some really heavy stuff, Baby Reindeer, but you have the sort of like scandalous, the Martha character. She was sort of like an in to get to like, really kind of dig into the juicy parts of it. But I don't think it's Jason Bateman. I don't think it's, that is a interesting category. Like Jake Lacey, All Her Fault, sure. I haven't seen Black Rabbit. I don't know if anybody from Lord of the Flies is gonna pop up in there or what, but I think that category, yeah, Charles Melton could be in a nice place, especially if they, I'm posting a piece about limited series probably this week, so let's see how my thoughts marinate, I guess.
My guess is that a lot of people that participate in Gold Derby haven't seen Death by Lightning, but I don't think Nick Offerman is number eight on that list. I think he's probably in the top three. Just
You think
because
so? Have
Nick
you seen it?
Offerman is, no, I haven't, but Nick Offerman is having such a moment right now between this and Margot's got money troubles, and he's got a book out. Like, he's everywhere right now. And I, somewhere, sometime, he's going to hit that role and he is going to win an Emmy because he is, he was never
He
nominated
has a
for
guest
Parks
Emmy.
and Rec. Excuse me.
He has a guest Emmy for
Did he win for Last of Us?
yeah, Strawberry Lube Fest, yeah.
Forgot that he won for that.
But I actually wonder if now I'm interested why that you brought up Death by Lightning. Death by Lightning is only four episodes. It is directed by the same person, written by the same person. I actually wonder if that is something that we might be underestimating a little bit. I don't think it's in like a guaranteed like stealth contender. And I don't think if you go on Netflix launched their FYC site and their I think their main focuses are Beef and Lord of the Flies. But and Death by Lightning is on like the bottom tier of their limited series contenders list, but I feel like that is a show that sorry, I'm pulling it up. Limited series, they have Beef, The Beast in Me, Black Rabbit, Lord of the Flies, Monster, and Remarkably Bright Creatures for TV Movie before Death by Lightning and like four other contenders. But I think Death by Lightning is something I know people like in the real world, I'm using air quotes here, have seen and they liked. So I don't know if, I don't know.
Do you know who directed Death by Lightning? Was direct Matt
Matt
Ross, who
Ross.
played Charles Montgomery in American Horror Story.
No
An
offense,
actor.
Mr. Ross, but sometimes you have a creepy face.
He's got a very creepy face. It looks like one of those old like Vincent Price wax figures from like House of Wax, where it's like his face looks very spongible, like moving around. Anyway,
Yeah, but he did like he people might know him best for he was Lewis in American Psycho. The one
he
who was
was
very
also, for those who watched Silicon Valley, he was also Gavin from Silicon Valley. Probably didn't watch that. Probably wasn't your thing.
Oh, I didn't, but
But
he directed Captain Fantastic.
yeah, he got a lot of awards for that.
Okay.
I will probably catch up to that one because it's a compelling part of history. And I think Nick Offerman is fantastic, and it's got Michael Shannon in it too. Limited series, do you think, I'm going to take The Beast in Me out of this equation and say it's between Love Story and Beef. Do you think that Beef's relatively shallow reception is going to hurt it? And do you think Love Story is the one that has the bigger momentum going into the final Emmy season?
So I don't think the ratings for Beef necessarily hurts it right now. I kind of look at how the first season like steamrolled everything. Like it won everything everywhere. It was in that section of years very recently where it got like really annoying, at least to me, that it was winning the same things in every single award show. I think right now Love Story probably has the most passion behind it. At least vocally, like people that love that show love that show, I think. And they love JFK Jr. and they love that love story. Whether they like even, think that the show properly executed that is one thing within itself. But maybe they just love that there's a show about it and they'll vote for it. I don't know. I think Beef, I mean, it dropped all at once, so maybe people just need to catch up to it. But I feel like the reviews for season two aren't as high as season one, but it's nothing to scoff at all. And you have such highly respected actors like Oscar Isaac, like Carey Mulligan, and Kaylee Spaney and Charles Melton, definitely up and coming performers. I mean, there's no reason to count them out. So I'm sorry, long-winded answer. I think that Love Story has the edge, but I would not be surprised if Beef overtakes it.
Fair. All right, let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And I'll let you go first because mine's going to feel like a carbon copy of last week.
There's a I need to finish Margo's Got Money Troubles. My review is very late. I have to finish Half Man because I think I'm going to review that. And then I'm going to be really faggy and say that I'm living to go see Mother Mary. On Sunday, I'm gonna do a double feature of that and oh my God, Steven Soderbergh's The Christophers with Ian McKellen and Michaela Cole is here, so I want to do a double feature of that.
Isn't Michaela Cole in both of those?
Is
I
she?
think she's in Mother Mary.
Yes, she is. I'm doing a Michaela Cole
Michaela
double
Cole
feature.
double feature. There you go.
That's the new Barbenheimer
Congratulations.
for this Sunday.
Don't you mean Doomsday?
Yes.
Yes. Of course you
Jason is
did.
both of those movies come out on Jason's birthday, and when I told him, I was like, "Oh yeah, those two movies are coming out on your birthday. Which do you want to see?" And he goes, without skipping a beat, he's like, "None of them. Neither. Don't want to see those." Like, all right. Stand.
Oh, that's like it's going to be like 6 hours of movie going because Dune and both of those things are 3 hours long.
Oh yeah. No, that's like a 7-hour evening.
Yeah. All right. I still have not seen Project Hail Mary. I'm really going to try to go see it this weekend because I do want to see it in a theater. I want to see it on a big screen. I
Yeah.
just. Like, I was in line to go see Michael and people were still buying tickets to it. They were still going to see it and it's doing incredibly well. I need to see it before it leaves the theaters. Thank you, Amazon, for extending the theatrical window to 45 days
Thank
instead of
God.
30. Because I mean, it's still $20 million a weekend. I mean, that's huge. Like, when's the last time a movie has done that?
I gotta say that I think I said this when I mentioned that I saw it, but or may mention it with Megan, but I mean, I saw it I think in the second weekend, and that theater on it was like a Tuesday. It was oh during the week, and there was like at least 50 or 60 people in this one theater. So the movies are back. Ugh.
And then Michael's going to make $80 million this next weekend. Devil Wears Prada going to make $100 million or something like that, something ridiculous. I don't know how a romantic comedy starring Meryl Streep's going to make $100 million, but There we go.
Well, I
It's
already
going
have
to
my
be a
tickets.
big year. We need to do a summer movie preview, but it's going to be a enormous year at the movies because, I mean, look at June. You've got Spielberg with returning to Alien territory. You've got Toy Story 5. Just thing after thing after thing. Then you've got The Odyssey in July, which I think looks like a big wet rag, but okay. People love it.
Well, you know, Christopher Nolan, he is cinema, so
You know, it's fine. I'm, so anyway,
wet rag, that's funny.
well, I mean, the trailer, the cinematography all looks just the same color. It just doesn't look,
Blue.
yeah, everything looks blue. Anyway, but that's, I don't know. Anyway, TV Ultimate Baking Championship, watching that.
I
Did
just
you
started
start it
that
yet?
today.
It's
I
fun.
started
I
it.
like it. I like
Yeah, it
it.
is fun.
Margo's, we binged 3 episodes of Margo's Got Money Troubles, which is not saying a lot because they are like 30-minute episodes. Michelle Pfeiffer, you need that Emmy. Like, I love you, Hannah Einbinder, but Michelle Pfeiffer, this is, we need to talk about this show, but this Michelle Pfeiffer performance reminds me of like Married to the Mob. Like, it's
Yes,
that
exactly.
era of Michelle
It's
Pfeiffer,
the,
and I am so
it's like
excited.
she's wearing fake teeth, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
She's,
boobs.
oh yeah, boobs up to her chin. Like, it's like the thing about her is, like, I saw somebody say, like, she's reminding us that she's a movie star. I was like, fuck you for forgetting that she's a movie star. How dare you? That's homophobic. But, like, that performance, and maybe just is her in general, because she's like one of my, top three actresses ever, period, that I grew up with. And it's just that she, in like one line reading, can be, she can be icy, she can be sexy, she can be sad, she can do, it's I think, and I think what it is it's her vocal tone. Like, it can quiver in ways that you sort of don't realize what she's doing. And it's just sort of like she's playing a character who wants to present herself in a certain way, and she knows what she wants, and she is compromising so much. And she's just, this is all right. Next hour, Michelle Pfeiffer appreciation and Margot's Got Money Troubles, because I think she's fucking fantastic.
It's great to have her back in this kind of role,
Thank
this sort
God.
of bottom feeder fighting her way through. Not that she's not a bottom feeder. I mean, she is fighting her way up. She's trying anyway.
So
Bottom
much
feeder may
love for
be a bit
Chris.
harsh, but you know, just a not a French Exit or Elena Lenska from Age of Innocence type character. Not a moneyed person. Somebody who is fighting. I'm She excels at this role. She excels at this stuff.
And I have to say that this would be an entirely different show if the relationship between her character and Elle Fanning's character was antagonistic. We've
No,
seen
they and
that
they love
so
each
many
other.
times.
Yes.
They love each other. They have such a, and they recognize how different they are from each other. And I think that, oh my God, it's so, after seeing her play so many different kinds of moms, like, I think White Oleander is like one of her
Oh
best performances, period. Oh
yeah,
my
I
God.
agree.
Versus to that I'm sorry, Michelle, horrible Christmas movie that came out last year. The
Don't
sort of,
watch it.
not, it's not good. The sort of like overlooked kind of mom who can do everything. This is the type of, if I'm gonna have Michelle Pfeiffer as a mom, I want it to be her. Cheyenne, Shyanne. So,
All right.
not so shy. Sorry,
And
tangent.
as I can, I'm continuing my watch of Parks and Rec. So I'm getting a lot of Nick Offerman right now from Mario's Got Money Troubles, Parks and Rec, listening to him on the Amy Poehler podcast, Good Hang. And
Did he guest
we'll,
on her podcast?
yes, right, just dropped today.
Oh my God, I need to listen to it. Okay, this is great.
Introed by Aubrey Plaza.
Oh.
And yesterday was the 10th year, I think, 10th year anniversary of my or seventh, maybe 10th. It was the anniversary of my interview with Aubrey Plaza.
Oh,
Yeah.
washing dishes or in a bathtub or
Or in a bathtub. Yep.
I
Something
tell
to.
people about your experience of that interview.
You know, I've softened a little bit on Aubrey Plaza because I see what she's going through right now, and she's being judged a lot, and I feel bad for her.
That's shitty.
For yeah, because we she's being judged by her relationship with Christopher Abbott and her marriage to Jeff Baena, who killed himself. And did those two things overlap? And everybody's taking all kinds of sides on this, and it's really nobody's business. So I'm getting back into Parks and Rec era Aubrey Plaza. So I'm softening on her. I can forgive. Can't forget. I can forgive.
I don't think you could forget that if you tried.
No, no way, no way. And then books, I am continuing Bonfire of the Vanities, and I picked up another Freida McFadden book. I can't tell you what the title is, but I can tell you that there is a woman who is in trouble, and she's
Wow.
also doing nefarious things.
What a departure.
Those things are like crack for me. I don't know why she tapped
Jason
into it.
read one in like a day. One of her
Yes,
books. Yeah.
you can read them like that. You should read Dear Debbie. Dear Debbie is so
Dear
fun.
Debbie.
Didn't I
Okay,
tell
I'm
you
gonna
about
look that
that?
up.
Did you see it at
I don't think
Target?
so.
Okay. Dear Debbie is
Oops.
so fun. She writes a she plays she writes about a the main character is Debbie. She writes a an advice column, and she's slowly losing her mind. It's a lot of fun. All right, does that cover it?
Yeah.
So we are the two M's, contending co-founders Joey Moser and Clarence Moy, missing Megan McLaughlin. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or click like and subscribe here on YouTube, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.